Morning, everyone. Good to be here with all of you. Welcome, visitors. Glad you're here, and I hope it can be a blessing to you as well. We've got to get a few things set up here, so let me do that. I'm going to try doing this with my computer on the pulpit because I have my notes there instead of printing them off, so we'll try that this time. There it is. There's blue. Must have to be aimed pretty directly at it. Technical difficulties here. Talking about humility this morning, so I think it's a good thing for me to have technical difficulties. There we go. That would be good enough. Okay, let's get going. So good to see you all here. And as you can see here, I'm talking about the strength of humility. I'm not quite sure how to make it full screen, but I think it's good enough. So this past week, we were in Florida and with my brother and his family, which was great. And a lot of good experiences there. And one thing that I find interesting, like just talking about humility and that kind of thing, you know, when I'm with my brother, he's 13 years younger than me, and it's surprising, like, how much stuff, like, he's ahead of me in a lot of areas, like, a lot of wisdom there. You know, he's 28, I'm 40, and there's a lot of wisdom, and it takes some humility. Like, for some reason, it seems like if you're one of the older ones in the family, I am the oldest in the family, it seems like you should have got there before they did, and that you should have some more wisdom and all that, but anyway, it's not that way, so I love being with him and so on. The thinking about the Sunday school lesson and how we were talking about, you know, all the home, and we were talking about just success in life and different things, and how much of that, like with the home and all the, you know, all that goes into that, and how much of that is related to humility as well. Like there's a lot of really. So if we don't have humility, it's not going to work out very good in our family relationships, in our marriage relationships. It's not going to work out very good in our, like, we think about, like, success and our drive for success and that kind of thing. If we're, you know, got a lot of pride there, that's often what drives a lot of that. We've got, you know, we feel really insecure inside, and so we just have a tremendous drive for success, and then our family suffers. And so humility truly factors into all areas of life, relationships, you know, our service for others, with others, you know, just all kinds of things. This morning for our text, I want to look at Matthew 5, verses 1 to 12. So this is part of the Sermon on the Mount. Sermon on the Mount is, you know, Jesus taught that. And if you look at Matthew 5, 6, and 7, like, really, if you were just looking for a real basic or like a condensed version of what living the Christian life is all about, if we read the Sermon on the Mount and just really study that, that's going to give us a really good base for what the rest of the Bible is all built on. And so we're just going to be looking at the first part here as we talk about the strength of humility. You'll see different in the first few verses. You'll see different terms that seem a lot like humility, like they seem very much the same. And hopefully, we can unpack that as far as what, like, how each of those is related together. And it's a really good thing for me to think about this morning. And so this study was really good for me. Let's read Matthew 5 verses 1 to 12 now. And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. There's the first one, poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Poor in spirit, meek. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Merciful was another one. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Peacemakers is another one. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Here's some questions that you may ask when you're thinking about humility. You might ask this. We talked about being poor in spirit. You might ask, does poor in spirit mean I have no value if I'm just poor in spirit? Does living humbly require me to be a doormat for people to walk over? What is pride, really? If I live out of shame, am I more meek and humble? So all of these are legitimate questions. They're just some that popped in my head as I was thinking about this. One thing for sure, like, being humble goes against human nature. Like, it is not something that the flesh desires at all, like, to be humble. It may look humble, like Adrian talked about this morning, about how we can do things, and, you know, we can put on the actions, but it's not it's not coming from inside. So it goes against human nature. Our desire as humans is to self-protect We want to protect ourselves at all costs. We want to be self-sufficient. We want to just, you know, do everything ourselves. And all of us have been so what we believe about humility or pride or anything like that has all been a narrative that we've either been taught, you know, intentionally by our parents. We talked about intentional teaching and so on in the Sunday school lesson. Or it could have been something that was caught, like something we observed from our life experiences. And that's what the lens that we see all this through, as far as humility and pride. So hopefully these questions will have answered them, or at least have some of the answers till we get to the end of this. Okay, so the focus this morning is to empower men and women to courageously live out their faith with humility. So here's what we're going to go through. We're going to look at these some of these terms: poor in spirit, meekness, and humility. That's the first part. Then we're going to look at pride, second part, and then we're going to look at why it matters. I don't like a lot of theory, like personally. Like, I'm not real big on that. Like, just like, this is the theory of how it all works. I want to know how it applies to real life. Like, what's actually the, what can I take away from this to apply to my life next week or this week? That's really the real world implications and applications is really what I really enjoy. But I realize that there is a place for theory as well. So we're going to get into both of those. But, you know, the thing is, maybe me not liking theory might also be just too much of a checklist mentality. I just kind of want to go down through and have a checklist, which can be a problem as well. But that's a subject for another day. So let's look at, here's a few quick definitions, and then we're going to look at these more in depth, each one. So poor in spirit, is a spiritual beggar. Think about a beggar, spiritually beggar. Meekness is strength under control. And then humility is lowliness of mind. And then pride is self-worship. So what you have here is we have two bills. We've got $200 bills. I've never seen a counterfeit bill, like an actual real one. I've seen, like, you know, play money and stuff. But some of the counterfeit bills look pretty real. And, you know, they have most of the things that you need. There's all kinds of different, you know, special things that they put on the bills nowadays. But, you know, maybe the paper feels different. Maybe it's, got some, the serial number doesn't line up, and there's, maybe it's missing some of the security features. But anyway, counterfeit versus genuine. And so when we're looking at these different things, like, so example, humility, meekness, pride, all that, there's a counterfeit and there's a genuine version of what this actually is. And so the counterfeit version, we might think, like, for example, we may think something is humility, but it actually isn't. Or we may think something is pride, but maybe it isn't actually. So that's the counterfeit versus genuine there. And these come from our belief systems. Our beliefs come from somewhere. And that's what is telling us whenever we see these things, is it counterfeit or genuine? So is it true or is it false where our beliefs come from? So talking about poor in spirit. So first of all, the counterfeit version of poor in spirit. So one thing you might ask is, does that mean I'm worthless? Like if you're poor in spirit, you're walking around like, I'm nobody, I'm poor in spirit, I'm worthless, I don't have any value at all. That's not true at all. Like, you're priceless. Like, you're made in God's image. You have great value. Like, you're not worthless. Like, that is not what poor in spirit means. The other thing, I have no money there. What that means is, we may think that poor in spirit just means poverty, like no money. Like, that's not what it means. The Bible talks a lot about money and poverty and riches and all that kind of thing. But that's not what it actually means here. It means, it's talking about spiritually, like poor in spirit in this particular situation. That what the genuine version of a poor in spirit actually is spiritually bankrupt. And so we talk sometimes about, pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps. And what bootstraps are is, like, you know, on the back of your shoes or boots, you might have that little loop there to pull them on, like if they're really tight and you try to pull them on. Well, here's the thing. If you're sitting down, there's physically no way you can stand up by pulling on your own bootstraps, like kind of lift yourself up by your own bootstraps. Like, that's impossible. So there's no way that we can bootstrap our way to heaven. Like, our righteousness is as filthy rags. Like, the righteousness that comes from within us, like, apart from God, is nothing. It's, like, utterly disgusting. Filthy rags, and it is nothing. There's zero value there. And so that's where, when we get a picture of that, when we can really grasp that our value is nothing as far as spiritually. There's nothing we can do to save ourselves. Then we start to realize what it's like, what a good version of poor in spirit is, a good belief about that. Our very breath depends on Him, depends on God. There's nothing we can do. Life actually comes from God. There's literally nothing we can do. And when we think about mourning, well, the only thing we can do is accept His free gift, which we will talk about, of salvation. But other than that, there's nothing we can do to earn righteousness. In Matthew 5, it talked about, blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. The more we can grasp this, how there's nothing that we can do to earn salvation, it will cause us to mourn. Like, there's nothing we can do. There also may be some more things that go with mourning, but I think there's no coincidence that it comes right after the poor in spirit and before meek. So I think it all applies to the same thing. So we mourn. When we're feeling poor in spirit, we can... You know, we can pray and we can cry out to God, and we're like, God, we need You so much. There's nothing I can do myself. I need You. And when we're feeling poor in spirit, the problem is when we're not feeling poor in spirit, then all of a sudden that stops, or it becomes very little. And we're, you know, we're trying to do things on our own again. We're trying to bootstrap ourselves again. We need to become as a little child. Like it talks about that. Jesus set the little child, you know, on His lap, and He's like, hey, you got to become as a little child to enter the kingdom of heaven. And talking about seeing my brother down there and his family, he has two children, Maverick and Brooklyn, him and his wife do. And it was just awesome seeing them and the innocence that they have. And also for an example, is they are very social. Like, these children are incredibly social. And so they absolutely love going and interacting, like, with the neighbors. They've got a bunch of older people that live around them in the development and stuff. And they're just, like, running over there, talking to them all the time. The mail lady comes there, running out there to meet her and talking to her. And it's just, like, they're very innocent and open and accepting, like children are. And you've, I'm sure, seen that with your own children as well. Some are obviously more, you know, extroverted than others, and that's fine. But anyway, children are trusting and innocent. And usually if they're not trusting, you know, it's maybe because of, you know, fears that somebody else, like, brought to them. The other thing I'm thinking about with poor in spirit is how, like, you're going down the road and your car, you know, needs gas, obviously, to run. And so you step on it, like this talking about, like, with the, you know, how when we're, when we feel poor in spirit, like we know that we need God and we want more of Him. And so we step on the gas, and the gas is flowing in. It's flowing in wide open. And then we go to slow down, because everything, we get up to speed and things start to go better. And then the gas just slows down to a trickle, and we're just kind of cruising along. And that's kind of how it is with us. Like when we feel like we're poor in spirit. So that was an analogy that helped me to think about it. Okay. Now talking about meekness. So the counterfeit version of meekness, so we might say meekness is weak. So that might be something. It seems weak to the flesh, for sure. Remember how we said, so humility and meekness can be kind of used interchangeably. Like if you look at the verse there, blessed are the verse 5, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. You could also say blessed are the humble, for they shall inherit the earth. We're talking about strength and humility. So the... So it seems weak to the flesh. What meekness really is the opposite of striving for power and prestige. So, like, the flesh is you know, really trying to strive for position and power and prestige. Like, humility and meekness is the opposite, like the polar opposite of that. A counterfeit of meekness can be shame. And this isn't a study in shame. That'd be a great thing to talk about at some point. But basically what shame is it says shame and guilt. Like, I've always, you know, had some problems, like, trying to determine the difference between that. And really what it is shame, it attacks your identity. It says, I'm a bad person. I'm bad. I'm no good. And guilt, what that says is it says, I did bad things. And so guilt is good if you did bad things because it brings you to repentance. Shame, you can have shame without ever doing anything wrong. And so if you walk around all meek and shy because you're full of shame, that isn't actually genuine meekness. Okay, remember, well, we'll talk about the genuine version, but it's strength under control. Also passive. Passive is not, like if you're passive, that's not meekness. And often the root of being passive is just, is shame, or it can be fear, is often what makes us passive. And then no voice, if you feel like you have no voice, that can also seem like it can seem like meekness as well. Like I'm just walking around, everybody's running over me, and I'm just, I have no voice, I have no say, I can't do anything. But really what often happens when someone has no voice is it was stolen by someone in power, and it makes you feel powerless at that point. And so that is, whoever stole it, it was ultimate pride on their part. But that's actually not meekness. So what meekness is strength under control. So I like this picture here. So this lion, we would all say that the lion is very strong. And, you know, that was probably an AI-generated image or something. But the sheep there, the lambs and the lion, there's a picture of that in Revelation about the lion and the lamb and so on. But, like, think about that. Lion has tremendous power, tremendous strength, but it's under control at that point. And he's protecting the little lambs. So that's a beautiful thing to me. Who was the meekest person that ever lived? That's right, it was Moses. And so it said he was meek above all men. You can turn to Exodus 2, verse 16 to 19. Let's see what he did. Exodus 2, 16 to 19. Okay, verse 16 says this. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. Any of you girls doing that? And the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. And when they came to Reuel, their father, he said, how is it that ye are come so soon today? And they said, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and also drew water enough for us and watered the flock. So this meekest man, Moses was the meekest man. What did he do? Did he just cower passively, like hanging out there, like, they're getting kind of aggressive, those guys there. And like, no, instead he stood up and he chased them away and he watered the flock and he helped these girls. So anyway, he was protecting the innocent. Meek is not weak. So be like Moses. Okay, now we're looking at humility. So the counterfeits for humility, one thing here is, well, let's first of all think about the difference between humility and meekness. So meek is primarily your behavior toward others, and humility is primarily your attitudes towards yourself. So inward versus outward. So the counterfeit of humility could be asceticism. What that is you think of maybe like a monk or something like that. You know, they live and they deny themselves of all the, you know, physical pleasures. They maybe, you know, lots of voluntary poverty, you know, tremendous fasting, you know, maybe hold your arms up for days on end, you know, things like that. Deprive yourself of sleep for days just to, you know, try to earn favor from God. And that might seem kind of good, and we are supposed to deny ourselves. Discipline is good, all that kind of thing. What asceticism ends up doing is it seems like if we are submitting ourselves to things like that, like really we just can't possibly accept God's free gift of salvation. Like we're like, well, there has to be something that we can do ourselves to earn salvation. And so I've got to do this. I got to do like all these extreme things to try to earn God's favor, because I just can't wrap my mind around and I can't submit myself to God's free gift of salvation. It's too easy, too simple. So that's what it seems like. Now another counterfeit can be self-deprecation, And basically what that means is when you're running yourself down, you're like, I'm no good. Maybe you're often in your talking to people, like you're like, I'm just stupid, I'm no good, or whatever. And the reason you say that, like, be honest about this, the reason you say that, the reason I say that, is you want people to say, oh man, you're good, you're awesome, no, you're doing great. And that's what it is, like, we're trying to do that, and it's not actually humility, but we're beating ourselves up, but it's not humility. Okay, so then we have genuine humility comes from a balanced view of self. In Romans 12:3, it talks about don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. And sometimes what we take from that is we take the view of, like, just think, like, that you're no good. Like, just think, have a very low version of yourself, which we did talk about lowliness of mind there. Well, here's the thing. What's the first commandment? Somebody tell me, what's the first commandment that God gave? The first commandment with promise that Jesus gave. I'm sorry, I'm not talking about the Ten Commandments. What did Jesus say?
Love thy neighbor as thyself.
Well, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and then love thy neighbor as thyself. Yeah, so here's the thing. That's good. So love God with all your heart. We understand that. And love your neighbor as yourself. What if you don't love yourself at all? How's that work out with your neighbor? So we're talking about a balanced view of self, like not looking at yourself as like, I have no value. Remember, your value comes from what God says about you. That's where your value comes from. It's not from like the things you do or the things you don't do. And like your success and whatever, however you define success, it's not that. It's from what God says about you. And if we can have that solid identity, it's going to change everything. Here's a little thing from C.S. Lewis, and it says this. Do not imagine if you meet a really humble man, he will be what most people call humble nowadays. He will not be a sort of greasy, smarmy person who is always telling you that, of course, he is nobody. Probably all you will think about him is that he seemed a cheerful, intelligent chap who took a real interest in what you said to him. If you do dislike him, it will be because you feel a little envious of anyone who seems to enjoy life so easily. He will not be thinking about humility. He will not be thinking about himself at all. A lot of times when we're, you know, going through life, what we're really thinking about, you know, what are other people thinking about us? How, you know, all that. And it causes us to behave in some, you know, pretty unsavory ways. So now let's get into pride. I'm sure that we've all been taught about pride a lot in our life, and you know, people saying, like, maybe like judging us, like, hey, you're proud, maybe people's version of what pride is. Well, here's the deal. The counterfeit, the reason I put sometimes there is because sometimes these things can be genuine pride on the left side, the counterfeit. Sometimes they're not. But really, what pride really is much more insidious than these. Like, it's much more devious and much more, like, crafty and hidden than what these things are. So satisfaction, what I meant by that is in 2 Corinthians 7:4. So satisfaction, so when we say that, hey, we're proud of, you know, our children, we're proud of, whatever. Like, we're satisfied with the job well done, things like that. In 2 Corinthians 7:4, it says this. Great is my boldness of speech toward you. Great is my glorying of you. I'm filled with comfort. I'm exceeding joyful in all our tribulation. So there, Paul was talking about his glorying in them. And he's basically saying, I'm proud of them. The NLT actually says that. I take great pride in you. And so that's what that means, satisfaction and then talking about beauty, because that's a big one. A lot of people say that, you know, beauty, like, is, you know, you're proud. If you stand in front of the mirror too long, don't look in front of the, you know, don't stand there, you're going to be proud, all that kind of thing. Now, we know that Satan was, his great sin that got him kicked out of heaven was pride. That's what it was. And pride is the root of all sin, really. So when we think about beauty, so we think about, like, you know, maybe our natural God-given beauty that came from God, and you know, God gave that to us. So, like, why are you proud of your God-given beauty? Well, Satan had God-given beauty as well. He was given beauty. There's, you know, you can put on a bunch of things and you know, improve your appearance, like in your opinion and all that kind of thing, and others' opinion. And, you know, we call that vanity. Well, here's the thing. That's something that you personally have to decide. If you're falling in the category of vanity, that's something you need to decide. I don't think that's something we need to be judging other people and be like, hey, you're vain, you're proud. Like, that's something you need to decide yourself. We can really judge other people harshly, but we really don't want to judge ourselves. You know, we can judge other people for being proud. Like, that's really a big deal. Maybe it's just me. I'm not sure. Okay. Another thing can be confidence. You see somebody that's really confident, and that can be, that when I looked up the definitions of pride, that is one definition that a lot of people give, is that extreme confidence or self-confidence looks like pride to people. There again, like, it's easy to judge other people and be it through our lens that we're seeing life through. Like, hey, if I was doing that, then I would be proud. Well, it can be a counterfeit. And the important thing is we need to judge ourselves. We need to check our own heart. And quit trying to judge other people for you know, for being proud. Really, what pride is self becomes God. So what that means is that we're taking the glory that belongs to God, and we're keeping it for ourselves. So that's why it's a big deal. So, like, if we're so we get, you know, satisfaction and significance from things we do, like we're talking about, like, success and whatever our sphere is, and we get that, and we might take the credit for it. Like, we say, hey, it was because of us, because we did such a great job. We studied this thing, we implemented, we were disciplined, we did all this, and it's all because of us that we had this success. And you name whatever. We think of money, we think of, like, anything that you're successful at. Maybe you're good at a sport, maybe you're, you know, successful in raising your family, maybe there's countless amount of things there. And we're taking the glory that belongs to God and keeping it for ourselves. Satan's sin was pride. And so, he became a god. He said, I want to be equal with God. Here's the thing. God hates competitors. Like, there's no, like, he does not want anybody else. Like, he's all powerful. And he created everybody. He created everything. He's all knowing. Like, he is way beyond us. His ways are so much higher than our ways, and he absolutely hates anything that tries to come equal to him. But yet, he cares so much about us, and he wants to have a relationship with us and all that, which is beautiful, but he does not want us to create self as a god. So so Satan, his sin was pride. And then he tried to, you know, in the garden with Eve, he tried to deceive her in that same way. And he's like, so think about it. Like, he wanted to be like God. And so what did he say to Eve? He was like, you eat of this tree. Don't worry about it. Like, just eat of this tree. And here's what's going to happen is you're going to be like God, or like gods, knowing good and evil. And he was trying to, like, get her trapped in exactly the same thing as what he, like, where he was at. Like, he was trying to be like God, and he was like, hey, if you eat of this tree, then you're going to be like God. And he's been deceiving people ever since. So here's why it matters. Let's get down to the daily stuff here. So pride is the root of all sin. We already talked about that. So you name any sin that you can think of. Here's just a couple of them. And here's my opinion on how it can be rooted in pride. So, for example, think of, like, murder. Think about you murder somebody. Well, here's what you're saying. You're saying, I deserve to live, but you don't. So that's, like, a pride there. You think of lust. You think about how that is, the root of that is you're trying to numb pain that's caused by your identity issues. You think of abuse. Name any kind of abuse, and what that is power over helpless people. So that's pride. A wrong view of humility and pride stifles growth. So we talked about the real and the counterfeit. So if we think that we're acting humble because of shame or we're, you know, passive or that kind of thing. Or maybe we're just afraid of pride. Some people have told us so much, you know, in our life that you're proud if you do that, that we just don't even do anything. Like we sit back, you know, in fear because we're like, I'm proud if I do that. If I would say that, I'd be proud. Like it's insidious for sure. So it stifles our growth. It stifles, God has a calling for all of us, and it keeps us from fulfilling that calling that he has for us if we have a twisted view of humility and pride. Also, we cannot care well for others until we reckon with this, basically reckon with pride. Because hidden and obvious pride, hidden is obviously a lot more slippery because you may not know, like it may not be obvious. Obvious pride is what we usually think of. That's what your parents warned you about, was the obvious pride. Okay? And but the hidden pride is actually a lot more slippery. And anyway, this pride, regardless of hidden or obvious, it will cause a filter for all our that all our relationships will need to be run through. And so when we're trying to interact with people, it's like our relationships, if we have hidden pride, we're not going to be able to relate well to others. Like our families are going to suffer, marriages are going to suffer, our interactions with people are going to suffer because of that. Okay, what's the solution? So the solution here is to, first of all, identify and renounce pride. In the next slide, we're going to talk about just a couple brief areas of pride. So first of all, identify and renounce it. Number two, experience Abba Father's love for real. And then root your identity in what he says about you. And then move towards others with grace and acceptance. So die to live is a paradox. The Bible is absolutely full of paradoxes. Like it says, you know, die to live. It says serve to lead. There's so many of them. Like it's a paradox. And so give up our, you know, die to live. And that's what humility is dying, going under in order to be raised up. Okay, so identifying pride. These are hidden pride. It was just a couple of things that I picked out. Happy to talk about this more later with you all if you want to. But the one of the big, and I think some why I picked these is there are some that I can identify with. And like getting defensive, that's a big one of pride. And it's talking about hidden pride. And this, so this applies to men and women. You know, these do. I'm obviously a man, so I'm probably talking from a man's perspective. I know pride in women looks different than pride in men. One thing I read about women was and men versus for pride was they said women are a lot more aware of the social implications of pride than men are. And so that's why you see men like being kind of arrogant and like, you know, and we're like more outward pride, whereas women maybe are a lot like the people are going to perceive me as proud. So their form of pride is maybe like a lot different. So anyway, you make your application. But being defensive. So let's say your wife brings something to you and it triggers something in there and you like, you know, you fire back at her. Often that's defensive. I've been in that boat a lot. And that's like hidden pride, really. The opposite of being defensive is having a humble, open spirit. Low self-esteem. Like the world loves to talk about self-esteem and you know how that it's a big issue. And they say the solution for low self-esteem is high self-esteem. Like quit thinking of yourself so low. You know, think high of yourself. Like come on. Like it's really what it is. But what I like much better than self-esteem and what I think is biblical is self-worth. So our worth comes from God and from what he says we are. That the closer you can get to an audience of one, like of God, what God thinks about you, the happier you're going to be. And so self-esteem is a counterfeit really for what self-worth is. But what I'm saying is low self-esteem can be pride as well. And you have this, it can... Because pride isn't always the way you think it is. It's not always this arrogant person. Sometimes it's very hidden, and it portrays itself as low self-esteem. Or it manifests itself as low self-esteem. Okay, power and control. This is one I think that men and women both deal with a lot. And the need to control your situations around you, the need to control people, the need to be in power and control over them. This can be pretty obvious. It might not be hidden. Or it might be You know, we talk about passive aggressive and things like that. Well, it can be that, and it can be hidden. But we're still manipulating and controlling people, you know, behind the scenes, and that's terrible. Like, it's pride. The healed version of this is surrender my will to God and let Him control others, rather than trying to, you know, control our life. Really, what we're trying to do with a lot of this is we're trying to find a way to make life work. We're trying to just, like, whatever it takes to make life work, to make me feel better, is really what it is. Like, make me, like, it's super selfish if you think about it. Like, we're just, like, make me feel better. And so I'm gonna do whatever it takes to make me feel better. And that's self as a God, is what it is. And then self-sufficient. And this is goes right along with that. So the good version of that is having a dependent spirit, recognizing my need for God and others. You know, we talked about it. We can't bootstrap our way to salvation. There's nothing we can do short of accepting His free gift in order to be saved. We think that if we have some, you know, some success in different areas and so on, that we're super self-sufficient, we're self-made man, self-made woman, we're just, like, you know, bootstrapping it. And really, it's all because of Him. Pride is striving, it's desperation to feel better, and it's miserable. Okay, so experiencing the Abba Father's love. Abba Father, Daddy Father, it adds, like, a personal connection to Him. I have this wall hanging, and I love it. This is Jesus running towards the sheep. I like to think of myself as that little muddy sheep there, that little lamb. And He left the 99 to rescue me. It's just, to me, I don't know, it just makes it very personal. Maybe you weren't modeled, maybe this was not modeled to you by your earthly father. Like, so a lot of your significance and your identity and so on should be developed from your experiences at home, but maybe it wasn't. And then you have to get it from God at that point. And like a secure identity is I belong, I am loved, I am valued. When God said to Jesus, He's like, this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. So that was all of that. Right there, He was saying, this is my Son that was belonging, beloved. He loved Him, in whom I'm well pleased, and that was significance. That was those things, and we all need all of those things, and that's what God was giving to Jesus. Belonging, love, and significance. In Romans 8:15, it says this: For ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but ye have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. If we have accepted the free gift of salvation provided by Jesus, which was, by the way, the ultimate example of humility and sacrifice, then we are the sons and daughters of God, just like this verse says here, through adoption, the spirit of adoption. That means if we're the sons and daughters of God, that means we're brothers and sisters to Jesus. How wonderful is that? And we can receive that same thing that God said to Jesus, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. We can receive that for ourselves. Safe, secure identity. So, and then the move towards others with grace and acceptance. So, men need a battle to fight. And here's the thing, if men don't have a battle to fight, they're going to go make one. And they're gonna engage with it, okay? We're talking about pride and humility, and we're talking about, you know, men sometimes are like, you know, I need to lead, I need to be a better leader. And what can happen is being a leader sometimes can be like domineering, like controlling, like trying to just crush other people. And they can, and that can be, that's obviously a counterfeit of what actually true leadership is, and it is rooted in pride. But really what men need to do, here's what I'm going to suggest, is be like Moses, like protect the vulnerable, especially women and children, but also men too. Like protect those that are at risk and the vulnerable. Don't be so worried about your fragile ego that you can't. Like, you're so worried about your ego. Like, I'm talking to myself. Like, I'm not talking to each, like, you specifically, each of you. But here's the thing. Like, our ego is so sensitive and so fragile that we just can't, we kind of protect it at all costs, and we end up, like hurting other people because of it. We dominate, we react, intimidate, control, shame people, or don't do anything and just are passive because of our ego. And I know the same thing with women. It just looks a little different. So you make your application there. The counterfeit strength, so we talked about strength through humility. The counterfeit strength, in my opinion, is caused by a weak identity. And if we're not, if our identity is super weak, it's not founded in God and what He says about us, we feel like we need to be strong, and we end up running over people, destroying people to try to make ourselves feel better. We're trying to root our identity in something else at that point. We wear these masks that try to hide how we feel inside. So we want to keep this outside like facade of, and then it, to hide how we feel inside. And then if anything touches that little boy or little girl inside, because I don't care who you are, you all have that little boy and girl inside. It's developed at different levels. And so you take the toughest person you know, they have a little boy or little girl inside of them. And then there's things that touch that. And we're so worried about trying to protect that. It's a fragile house of cards. Like, think of a bunch of cards, like playing cards, and you make you stack them up. I was going to put a picture on of that, but then I didn't. But, like, you stack these all up, and if one of those cards gets knocked out, then the whole thing comes falling down. And that's how we often are with this facade that we have on. We're just like, don't touch that inside of me. Like, I mean, we're so scared of that. And so it's hard for us to, like, live freely. And we end up, having hidden pride in there that keeps us from, like, associating with others in a way that has acceptance and grace. We end up trying to control them, trying to make them do things that make us feel better, make us less afraid, that kind of thing. We just came through Easter, and we talk about the power that rose Jesus from the dead. And here's the thing: we have that same resurrection power living inside of us. It's there. It is living inside of us. That same power. We have the power inside of us because of God, because of Jesus, what He did for us, because His ultimate example of humility, coming down from heaven. He didn't have to do it. But He came down from heaven. He chose to voluntarily submit Himself to this and give His life for us. The ultimate example of humility. So we have the power inside of us, and we have a mission to engage. Let's go. What's holding us back? Because of God, and because of His free gift of salvation, so I believe each one of you can have access to that. Like, it's not a lot of this stuff that we talked about might seem kind of deep and kind of heavy and stuff, but like, and it's not a quick overnight process. You just repent of pride and everything's going to be all fixed up and you're going to be good to go. Your relationships will blossom and everything will be fine. Kind of like we talked about in Sunday school, and there talked about the beautiful picture of the family and the olive plants around the table and, all that stuff. It seemed really idealistic. We do live in a fallen world, for sure. We have the flesh. We have Satan. Like, the same Satan that was tempting Eve, trying to get her, and he did. He got her to fall, and Adam fell too. And the same Satan is tempting us. He's here to kill, steal, and destroy. And he's still here, and we're longing for perfection in heaven. But until we get to heaven, we're gonna be in the battle, for sure. But don't forget that we have that same power that raised Jesus from the dead living in us. If we have accepted His promise, if we accepted the free gift. Humility is not a character trait to develop. It's a natural byproduct of being with Jesus, by Louis Giglio. We can't just act humble. Like, that's not going to do it. Like, that's the checklist. Act humble today. Check. It really comes from a solid identity as a beloved son and daughter of God. It comes from walking with Jesus every day through the battles, the hard times, caring for others, becoming a more perfect image bearer. Jesus said, if you have seen me, you have seen the Father. And the question I have for you and for me is like, if when people saw Jesus, they saw the Father, here's the thing. When people see us, do they see Jesus with skin on? Okay, let's pray. You can stand.